This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 7:14 and a half. Blue gray skies get us started this week, and that is in advance of some rain that's going to happen today and tomorrow. Some rain falling already. That's in advance of a cold front. Highs today and tomorrow are around 67, and Wednesday the highs go back down to 55 degrees or so, maybe a little bit higher than that, so we'll get some more cold weather coming in. Bruce Jennelson joins us, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department and on the Middle East peace process. Jordan Fiegel's smart enough to see this coming with Bashar Assad last week, and book Bruce, which is heads up to Jordan. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm good, Tommy. Hope you are as well.
I am okay. Tell people, if we can, I guess, about Syria and its place in the world and how it fell under the rule of the Assads.
Yeah, so Bashar Assad and his father, Hafez, ruled Syria for over 50 years. And even by, let's call it, standards of other Middle East countries, they were pretty brutal dictators. The prisons were full of political prisoners. In the civil war that's gone on for about the last 14 years, about half the Syrian population has either fled the country as refugees or been displaced. But it seemed like, you know, there was a stalemate there. There wasn't a lot happening. And then within a week to 10 days, boom, you know, this rebel group, it's not the only rebel group fighting. First, it took over the city of Aleppo, which is the second biggest city up on the coast. And then was in Damascus, and now we turn around and Bashar Assad's taking asylum in Moscow.
How did it happen so quickly in a second? But first of all, how did the people of Syria, you know, I saw a quote over the weekend that I loved, and somebody said, dictators look good until the last 10 minutes. And I saw somebody else wrote a piece about institutions and individuals. And I just wonder, how did the people of Syria fall under the dictatorship of the Assads?
Well, you know, if we go back to when his father came to power in the early 1970s, you know, almost every country in the region, Arab country, was under some form of one-person rule. You know, there were kings like in Jordan. There was, you know, Saddam Hussein actually had a predecessor in Iraq. In Egypt, the military, Mubarak had been in general before he came in. So it wasn't that uncommon in the region. And it got worse, you know, when the so-called Arab Spring happened in late 2010, 2011, and there were, you know, revolutions in Tunisia and Egypt and Yemen and Syria. It was another one of those moments that said, wow, you know, there'd been no change, and suddenly it's happening all over the place. And that's when Syria's civil war started. And you know, when it happened, in Tunisia and Egypt, they basically, protesters were, wanted to get rid of the leaders, you know, kind of, you know, figuratively off with your head. In Syria, it was actually interesting. They really didn't want to necessarily get rid of Assad, but they wanted him to change. And his unwillingness to reform even a little bit, you know, led to this war, you know, and there are so many different ethnic groups in Syria that this group that's triumphed is by no means the only one that's been out there fighting.
Let me ask about the ethnicity and also religion. Where does all of that fit in the makeup of Syria, and who could wind up running the country?
So this group that came to power, which the acronym is HTS, it's an Arabic name, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, is actually originally an offshoot of al-Qaeda and then ISIS. And allegedly the leader, this guy Abu Muhammad al-Jolani, says he's been more pragmatic. But he's an Islamist. He had his first major speech over the weekend at the Umayyad Mosque in Damascus, which is the biggest and a very historic mosque, and he referred to an Islamist future. So we don't know. I think it's pretty wide feeling that it's good that Assad is gone. Mm-hmm. But these guys ain't Democrats, and it's with all the four or five or more groups fighting, it's not clear how they're actually going to govern. After all the rejoicing and people getting into the presidential palace and all that sort of thing, you know, the next reports are going to be now what happens next.
Because I did see a report, Bruce, of and I forgot exactly how they phrased it, but they were protecting some facilities, and they said that they were protecting the institutions, and they didn't want it to fall into another dictatorship, which goes to individuals as opposed to institutions. But that being said, that institution could be ISIS or Sharia law, something along those lines, right?
Yeah, they did make one pragmatic move. They asked the prime minister to stay on and help them, you know, run things, provide services, and the like. And that's kind of learning the lesson from Iraq. When Saddam fell, there was an effort to get rid of everybody and anybody who'd been associated with him, including people that, you know, actually knew how to get things done and weren't necessarily, you know, repressive people. So that was a positive step. You know, Turkey's very involved. They've supported this guy. The U.S. has about 1,000 troops up in the northeast of Syria helping the Kurds, which is one of the big groups who are a Muslim group. They're not an Islamist group, but their identity is different than some of the other, you know, ethnic and religious groups in Syria. And so Turkey, Iran, Russia still has some naval bases there, so they still got some interest. The U.S., Jordan, Israel, you know, everybody is involved now. The Israelis have moved up a little bit into southern Syria. We had a bunch of airstrikes against ISIS forces, you know, just in the last day or two. So it's going to be swirling around us for quite a while.
Now, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back, and I'll ask you if what's in the best interest of the Syrian people is in the best interest of the rest of the world, or are those two aligned at all? Bashar Assad, I believe, is known to have killed about 300,000 plus of his own people, which pales in comparison to Stalin, which is at 12 million. But just like Saddam Hussein, he did use chemical weapons against his own people. 7:21 traffic now, WWL. 7:26 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Bruce Jenelson, our friend, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University, who previously worked in the State Department and on the Middle East peace process, so he knows the players, he knows of what he speaks. When it comes to Assad and Syria, I mentioned, Bruce, before the break, if what was in the best interest of Syrians was in the best interest of the rest of the world, but I wonder if you can put all Syrians in the same circled. Was Assad any nicer to Christians than he was to Muslims or sects of Muslims? Oh, Bruce, you're breaking up, and I have to have the answer to this question. Let's try it again. Bruce, let me take a break. Tim's going to try to reconnect with you. We'll try to call him back. Meanwhile, I will remind you of some things going on here at WWL. Christmas is for kids, of course, and if you want to feel good about New Orleans, you can join Newell Norman Thursday live from the New Orleans Chamber's annual business luncheon at the Hilton, New Orleans Hilton Riverside. You can visit with business and industry leaders, celebrate 20 years of the Chamber and 20 years of good business with special guests Jay Cicero, Sandra Herman, Blaine Kern Jr., and Percy Master P. Miller. That's Newell at the New Orleans Chamber's annual meeting Thursday, but Christmas is for kids. That has to do with Newell Norman Wednesday at H2O Salon and Spa on Metairie Road. He'll collect new gifts, toys and books, plus donations for Toys for Tops. You can stop by, say hi, bring an unwrapped gift, or make a donation on behalf of your family or business. Let's fill up the sidewalk with toys and gifts. Newell at H2O Salon and Spa. That's Wednesday, and then he's at the Chamber Luncheon on Thursday. Bruce Denelson's back, hopefully a better connection. Bruce, I asked about what's in the interest of Syrians and the interest of the country, and can you put all Syrians in the same bunch, or was Assad more friendly to Christians or Muslims of one sect or the other? Thoughts?
Yeah, there's a segment called the Alawites, which are an offshoot of Shia that was his, and he was mostly favorable to them. I think what all Syrians would benefit from is, you know, a government that's maybe a little bit democratic and is not repressive. There's a lot of natural talent in that country. I was actually there back in 2009. for some just, you know, negotiations, and I met with artists and people in business. And if some of the people, the, you know, the millions that left would come back, they could actually have a chance to set a model for other Arab countries. I wish I could be more confident that's going to happen, but that would be the best thing.
So who is it up to right now to determine what happens in Syria?
It's really going to be internal. You know, it's not something that we can determine. Right now, our highest priority is protecting the Kurds up in the northeast, because they've been fighting this group that came to power, and the Turks also don't like the Kurds because they're connected to Kurds in Turkey that the government doesn't like and all that sort of thing. And we have about 1,000 Americans stationed there. And I know I've met a lot of these guys when they come back to the States, and they believe the Kurds are really good partners. They help us fight terrorism. That's our number one priority. And then we need to work with others. Arab countries need to be in the lead in figuring out how Syria can sort of stay within the guardrails and have a prospect of a decent future. But that's not for us to go and run. We can help, but it's really time for countries like the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt to kind of be in the lead on that, because they've got the most at stake and they know the players the most. And we can help them, but we shouldn't, like, pick a side and say that's our guy. That never works.
We only have 20 seconds left. Is the world a more dangerous place, less dangerous place, or no change now that Assad has left?
I think it's no change. It's like, you know, we had a terrible guy, we might have another bad guy. But, again, the fact that he left is a good thing in and of itself. So let's see where we go.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it. As always, we'll come back to take a look at the Wall Street Monday Morning Markets with Mark when we return here on WWL.